Hello, this is Martin Patella for Life Enthusiast Podcast, and today I have the pleasure to again welcome Spencer Feldman from RemedyLink, remedylink.com if you want to go to his site, but we promote and stock Spencer's products at Life Enthusiast, and we are really happy about the relationship that we have built and established, and I respect Spencer a lot because he's gone through a personal evolution that has him understand things that the people who are bound by limitations of their profession fail to see. Spencer Feldman, welcome to Life Enthusiast.
Nice to see you again, Martin.
Yeah. Would you say that you are able to see things that others miss?
You know, I think we all have our own particular genius, and if you can find out what you're good at, then you can be of most service to the world. So I think where I'm particularly well suited is looking at medical issues with a scientific perspective that has not got the advantages or disadvantages of a traditional medical education.
Yeah, precisely the point. I remember 40 years ago when I was having to analyze this when I broke, my body was breaking. And I was going to all the medical people, the professionals with the degrees and white coats, asking them, please help me because I have these symptoms. And all they offered was, well, let's treat your symptoms. Not one of these highly educated people were asking, well, what is the cause of that? Where is the root cause here?
Well, I thought we could talk today about something that's right along those lines. What we have is hopefully not the first of many, but possibly given the sabotage we're seeing, industrial chemical disasters, namely the Palestine, Ohio disaster. Yeah. And that leads into, you know, a lot of people are going to may find themselves asking the question that you yourself asked, which is, why aren't I feeling well? And what can I do to fix it?
Yeah. I mean, there certainly are multiple issues here at play. One of them is, of course, the transportation industry as such. Why have they been allowed to lobby so effectively to be engaged in risky behavior, and why is the society allowing this? I guess my frame of mind on that is this. We are allowing the manufacturers and large corporations to internalize profits but externalize risk and unload the risk onto the society. And here we are, right?
Yeah, well, let's talk about Ohio because I think it's emblematic. I think the lessons we can learn about how to deal with that kind of toxicity are lessons that will be useful whether you're in Ohio or not. When you hear feedback or demands from the people who live in Ohio from those groups.
Yeah.
What they're asking for is testing, and they're asking to know when it's safe to go back. And they're asking for financial recompense.
Yep.
And I imagine, you know, and all of these things are obviously very important. What I don't hear any of them asking for is therapeutics. Like, what do we do to get these toxins out of our body?
Yeah. They're still angry, and they just want to thump somebody for the wrong that's been done to them. But they might not even have the understanding. And this has been lacking. I mean, my own personal experience was that I was made toxic by industrial approach to things, and it was not being addressed, right? Like, I just want to frame this in with the industrial revolution has taken us since the 1800s through the coal and then the petroleum, and then the chemical, and then the plastic. And we are living in a world that's been increasingly enriched, I'll call it that, by chemicals. And we have more and more chemicals, and we have established agencies like EPA that's supposed to allegedly protect us, when in fact they test nothing or very little. I mean, they have managed to ban 5 chemicals in the last 20 years, while, I don't know what, 200,000 different chemicals are being used. Well, anyway, so your point, let's just return back to your point, which is, well, okay, that's all very nice. Oh, the world is on fire, but what do I do? Right?
Yes, I appreciate the politics and philosophy of trying to understand how we got here and how to prevent it. Yet, I think in the immediate, what you really need are action steps on how to treat it. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the Ohio disaster as an example.
Yeah.
And what you're, there are a lot of chemicals that came out. They did an open air burn of the polyvinyl chloride. Now, you can burn these things in controlled conditions in an incinerator where you can maintain the temperature at a point where it'll break these toxins down to harmless things like carbon and nitrogen and oxygen. It's the toxins, as I understand it, that were released weren't toxic by virtue of the elements within them. There wasn't like plutonium, uranium, mercury, lead. They were toxic by virtue of their shape, meaning the, for instance, the dioxin has a very particular shape. The way the body works at a molecular level is its lock and key mechanisms, and shapes matter. So we'll come back to that in a second. Of all the toxins that are getting the most, that have the most potential for destruction, dioxin would be high on the list. And because they did an open air burn with uncontrolled conditions, the temperature likely went high enough to make a lot of dioxin, but not high enough to destroy it. Dioxin is a pretty simple molecule, and the challenge, there's a couple of challenges with it. One, it's mind-bendingly toxic. You're talking not parts per million, per billion. We're talking parts per millions of millionths. So it takes very little of this stuff to cause a problem. And the reason why we're seeing so many dead fish and birds is because they're excessively sensitive. The range of sensitivity in birds alone is 1,000-fold from one bird species to another. So when you see dead birds and fish, those are your canaries and goldfish in the coal mine.
Yeah,
that lets you know something's going on.
Yeah,
that's your cue to get out. Right.
Yeah, I caught a little piece in Ontario. Somebody on the Canadian side of the lake is saying, "Well, we're downwind from this." And it's been 7 days of significantly severe headaches. And the environment here is just smelling bad. And we've seen these sheen on the water and on the ground. And it's so fair distance away.
Well, the other issue is a lot of people will have the idea that, hey, you know, this is a bad smell. It'll come, it'll go. This is a toxin. It'll come, it'll go. When a toxin is water soluble, it goes in and it goes out, and the damage it does is limited to the time it spends in your body, which, you know, if water soluble, it'll be mostly gone in a day or two, right? If a toxin's fat soluble and it sticks into the membranes and the nerves and the brain, that toxin can be there for life or a really long time.
Yeah.
And so the people that say, oh, I've got a headache now and think it's no big deal, well, the thing that's causing the headache in you may never go away, or may leave at 1 or 2% per, you know, per year or something absurdly small. So what we need to do is we need to learn how to take these fat soluble toxins and render them water soluble so you can urinate them out. And dioxin is a fat soluble toxin. Right. So what I specialize in is making fat-soluble toxins water-soluble so you can urinate them out. Now, a water-soluble toxin is still a toxin. It's still going to damage things on the way out, the kidneys, the liver. So it's not that it renders it non-toxic. It's an event, a detox renders some, these detoxes that I'm going to suggest render things soluble. Yes. So you can put an end to their time in your body and get to the work of repairing the damage they've done.
Yep.
Now, the way dioxin works is there's something called an aromatic hydrocarbon receptor in their body. And normally, this is like many proteins, inert. It's bound to another protein called a chaperone. And so it's there in potential to be activated, but not activated at any point in time because it's it can get a little out of hand. And what happens with dioxin is it activates the AHR, the aromatic hydrocarbon receptor, knocks off the chaperone, and goes inside the cell and acts. And the response becomes exaggerated. Think of it like a bee sting to someone who's allergic, right? The body's response to this hyperactivated AHR is to generate so much free radical damage that it just sets the whole cell on fire from the inside out. And that's why you see generations of birth defects because the DNA gets damaged. This is why you just see a massive amount of free radical damage inside the cell from this. And there are people who are well-meaning who are giving a lot of bad, ineffective advice on how to deal with this. And they'll show you a bunch of studies saying, look at all these things, seaweed, chlorella, chlorophyll, bonita flakes, so forth and so on, that will increase or that will detoxify dioxin. No, they're not. If you actually read the studies that are referenced, they'll bind to it in the intestines if you eat some, so you don't absorb it. But that's quite different from getting rid of it once it's already in your body. And a lot of our, at this point, the exposure is dermal and respiratory. It will get eaten as it hits the farmlands, and in another year that gets to the grains, and then that gets to the animals and the grain and our grains we eat and beans and the animals that eat them. Yeah. So this will hit our food supply in a year or a half, yeah. Depending.
Yeah. But I even saw a talk by some, authority, doctory kind of a person saying, oh, this is all no big deal. Don't you worry about it. This is all water soluble. It'll just disappear. It'll dilute itself away into the environment. And don't you worry.
Some is water soluble, right? But if you see a sheen, when they show those pictures of dropping stones into the, and the sheen comes up,
yeah,
that tells you it's not water soluble, right? That tells you it's floating on the surface. That's insoluble.
It's fat on top.
That. Yeah, it will do that,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's not what, so there's plenty that's not water soluble. There may be some in there that are water soluble. Who knows how many chemicals were actually on the manifest, let alone created by the interaction of the chemicals with each other and a temperature.
Yeah.
So yes, I'm sure there's some more soluble chemicals. And then there's a number that aren't. The issue with dioxin also is there are chlorine carbon bonds in the dioxin molecule. Those are extremely strong bonds. They're not breaking up, which is why this stuff is so persistent in the body and in the environment. You can't oxidize it. You can't break it down. There are some soil-based microorganisms that will digest dioxin. And with any luck, people will, in an ideal world, the EPA would negotiate a big firm to make, train carloads full of that bacteria. And, obviously we want to check to make sure there's no unintended consequences of putting it into the environment, but start using those to remediate and break the dioxins up. That's one idea.
Yeah.
In any case, so now it's in the body. And so one of the things of advice is people will tell you to do certain supplements that will bind to it intestinally. Well, that's not where we're at now. Another piece of advice is someone once said, you should do green tea, catechins. And okay, there's some more wisdom in this one. The flavonoids, so the yellow things in nature, and a lot of plant substances can act as supplementary chaperones, meaning that when the dioxin knocks the AHR receptor chaperone off and the AHR becomes active, it then binds to green tea extract or binds to carotenoids or binds to elagitannins and therefore becomes inert again. And okay, that's a reasonable theory, but if you look at the math, you would need to do something like tablespoons of green tea extract, and I don't even know if you could without getting sick as a dog, to get a 50% reduction in the AHR.
Yeah.
So what, you know, that's one of these things that looks great on paper, and then you do the math, and no, it didn't really work out.
Yeah.
Now, things like dioxin are metabolized in the human body. We can break them down. I mean, they're slowly metabolized by oxidation and reductive dechlorination reactions. But mostly what the metabolism is to get them to become water soluble, and you can urinate them out.
Yeah.
And so we know that the body can do that with dioxin, with glutathione and glucuronic acid, and likely other things. We just don't know. So, you know, in previous talks, we talked about phase one, phase two, and phase three detox. Phase one is when when cytochrome P450 will either unmask or insert a polar functional group. Polar means, you know, it's got a charge on it, right? So that's OH, SH, NH2. It's either going to insert it or unmask it on a toxin. And then phase two is when a conjugate like glucuronic acid, glutathione, acetyl group, sulfur, something like that, binds to that polar group. Now it's water soluble, still toxic, but of limited duration. You can urinate it out. Phase three means that the urination defecation process is clear, right? You don't want to be constipated while you're trying to get the stuff out of you. Or you don't want your bile to be blocked up, or you don't want your kidneys not to be functioning well.
Right.
So, you know, we carry a phase one and phase two and phase three kind of protocol. Phase one is our, and phase two is our Zenoplex product that you carry.
Yeah.
The organic coffee, which is a recreation of a coffee enema, we know stimulates cytochrome P450. So we get that first phase. And then it has all the conjugating elements, the glutathione, which can't be orally taken because it'll be destroyed.
Right.
Glucuronic acid and all those things for that. And then the glutamins, which is another suppository you carry of ours. Then for phase three, we have the glutamins product that you carry of ours to support the proper movement of bile and make sure the kidneys are supported. Because remember, even a water-soluble toxin is still toxic. So, you know, for the people who are out there at this Ohio disaster or any kind of disaster, chemical disaster, I'm not talking metals. This is a different, that's a different way to go. We'll get into metals again in a bit, the three classes of metals. For those who have been exposed to this or something similar, you know, I think having some glutathione powder in your house and a nebulizer, you can mix glutathione with water, breathe it in. Lungs are very sensitive tissue. There's only a cell wall thickness between your lungs and your bloodstream. And so for helping your body, for the stuff you breathed in, inhaled glutathione. And then if you can't get a hold of our Zenoplex suppositories, you know, go get a 60cc catheter tip syringe, make a cup of organic coffee, let it cool down to body temperature, mix in a gram or so of glutathione, lubricate the end, and inject it rectally and hold it for as long as you can.
Right.
And that's something that, you know,
powdered glutathione is going to be hard to come by these days.
Possibly, you know, we could go through a short period of it, but it's made in large enough quantities. And I think it would be wonderful if the government would stockpile glutathione kits where they'll just have, you know, a little sachet of a freeze-dried coffee, you know, 10 grams of glutathione and a 60cc catheter tip syringe, and have those that they can immediately deliver to. Yeah.
I can just imagine the comedians on nightly talk shows having time with themselves with explaining to us how we need to administer it. I can just see the silliness and how reluctant people are to go for the suppository method, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's good to have some humor about this because it's, it could be really easy to fall into despair about, you know, there's even in Vietnam now, there's children born with cleft palates from the dioxin exposure from Agent Orange. So
and this is, we left in 1975.
Yeah. And, you know, we shouldn't get tunnel vision about dioxin. Of course, it's, 40,000 times more toxic than, what is it?
How bad is this toxicity level anyway?
So the LD50 dioxins are, you know, mind-bogglingly toxic. The LD50 for rats is 22 micrograms per kilogram, and for guinea pigs, 1 microgram per kilogram, which means it's somewhere between 2,000 and 60,000 times more toxic than cyanide, which is it. Right, for a human, that would be about 70 to 1,500 micrograms. So,
that's sort of fentanyl class of exposure.
Yeah, I mean, we're not talking milligrams.
No.
Right? Like a single milligram will kill somebody, right? And, you know, you'd be hard put to see that on a, on a spoon, what a milligram would look like. So if you want to know what dioxin does, go look up before and after pictures of Viktor Yushchenko, the Ukrainian president who, before he died, said Vladimir Putin arranged for him to be poisoned with dioxin. And we can watch the man age like 30 years in 3 days. The dioxins are a problem, but we don't want to get tunnel vision. They're not the only thing out there. You know, I mean, we've got, what else is in there? Vinyl chloride, ethyl hexacrylate, isobutylene, phosgene. And then all the, so it's a lot of stuff. And
I would like to broaden this, yes, we have this Ohio disaster, right? And so the entire watershed of the river is in trouble, and the environment north of and east of this fire that they voluntarily started, unbelievable. I'll just rant for a moment. I remember when the Fukushima radioactive incident took place, right? And I was thinking, well, who is the engineer who in a flood zone put the backup power in the basement? They could have, when they constructed, and it was Westinghouse who constructed it, they could have put those backup generators on the roof of the building at a level that the water would never reach. But no, they were so clever to put it in the basement, right? Which then, when it flooded, caused the power to shut down, which then caused it to melt. And 20,000 years later, we will have a half-life of cesium. Well, anyway, I'm just...
Whether this things like Fukushima and Ohio are incompetence or sabotage, or just plain or evil.
What does it matter, right?
We still have to know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
There was another train derailment just a couple of days ago in Ohio. So having the ability and the assets on hand to deal with the chemical exposure, in the old days, everybody would have activated charcoal in their medicine cabinet because that along with milk, kind of like the universal antidotes, right? So it's time for us to update our medicine cabinet because the toxins we've been exposed to have become more powerful and
prevalent.
More difficult.
That's where I was headed with this talk, which I was wanting to say, this is an example of it. It happened there, and it's an acute current blowout, but the overall level of toxins, industrial toxins, has been rising for the last 100 years. And it's, glyphosate is another lovely example, water soluble trouble. And we have more and more of it everywhere. So it's just, you could be sitting in California thinking, well, yeah, but that's Ohio, I'm okay here. Not necessarily. It may be coming your way. That's where I'm headed with this, is to say, and you're saying it right, let's all start getting, number one, educated about the pathways and the cleansing methods and having our kits ready and detoxing ourselves and our children, because, of course, the next generation is born more toxic than the previous. It accumulates.
Yeah. Yeah. Wasn't there something, maybe it's in the Bible or American Indian tradition, about the sins passing on for seven generations?
Yeah. Seven generations. That's correct.
Or maybe, you know, if you think that maybe the toxins are diluted 10 to 1 with each generation, well, okay. Maybe it takes that long to finally get the genetics clear again.
Or not.
So, you know, we've talked about chemicals. Let's talk about metals. You know, we have a product, Metacardium. It uses my favorite chelator, EDTA, to bind to metals. When you're trying to get rid of metals, it's the same principle as getting rid of chemicals. You want to find something that will render the metal water soluble. And the metals have a tendency so what happens is that the toxic metals, they look like things we need. So lead looks like calcium goes in the bones, and mercury might look like selenium, and so forth and so on. But because the charge is different, they can get stuck in the places that are trying to use these things. And what the metals are is they're catalytic. They don't get destroyed in the process of causing their trouble. They switch back and forth between oxidation states, and in so doing, tear electrons off things.
Yeah.
So
it's sort of like you have a brick that you're trying to break down with green peas.
Mm-hmm.
The body's defenses are like the green peas trying to hit at this impenetrable thing. And
yeah,
that's
so you know these metal toxins. You know they're a little machine. You could call them, you know, the world's simplest machines, right? Because their mechanical function is to tear off electrons, but they're perpetual. They never stop. As long as the metal's in you, it's ripping off electrons. And so how do you get rid of them? And you have to make them water soluble, which can be a little tricky because once they crystallize to a certain size, it's very difficult to get something soluble at a certain point. We can talk about electricity, allow electrons to do that in a second, but so what we want to do is we want to urinate out these metals. Now, the metals can get, you know, all the cells have little transporters on them to let things in and out. And if the metals go inside the transporters and get stuck there because they're the right size to go in, but the wrong charge to get out, it's like somebody crazy gluing your refrigerator door closed and your toilet seat down.
Mm-hmm.
Your house will become unlivable in very short order. So that's what happens to the cell.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to get these things out. And like I said, you know, we have Metacardium which we use with most metals. But there are two caveats. There's two things you don't want to use EDTA with. That's mercury and the very heavy elements like gadolinium at the bottom of the periodic table.
Mm-hmm.
So for mercury, you have to be mindful because you have to use a chelator. It grabs onto the mercury and won't let go, and EDTA will let go. It'll let go of mercury for Fe3 and chromium. So you could grab onto the mercury with some EDTA, and then it gets knocked off and moves someplace worse. Now, a little bit of mercury toxicity, it's not going to be an issue. It knocks off, you just grab it again later. But if someone's really heavily mercury toxic, and a lot of people who are sick, you know, have mercury toxicity and don't know it, then you really want to use a mercury chelator, and you know, contact me or I'll give you the.
I must tell you, I have, you know, I'm a living example of mercury toxicity, and I was successful managing it with zeolite. I know that you have your reservations about it, but it sure as anything worked for me.
Sure. So the issue, the two issues with zeolite is one, it absolutely has to be acid washed before you take it. It has to be clean. Otherwise, it'll have metals in it from the earth. The second is it doesn't get into the bloodstream, right? It works in the intestine.
If the particle size is right, it will.
Okay. So, right. If you have got the right particle size, a lot of zeolites, they're too large to make it into the bloodstream. And so it works great in the intestines. It can't, you know, and the blood passes through there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, zeolite can be done properly. Depends on where you're getting it from. And I'm sure you have an excellent source.
Yeah. I believe that we have a way to do it because I have enough cases now to to confirm that it is working.
Great. Now, the other Zen challenge is, what do you do with the ultra-heavy metals? And that would be the F-block series, the things on the bottom of the chart, you know, the hafnium, the gadolinium, the holmium, the thorium, all these things.
Uranium, depleted uranium weaponry.
Right. And, you know, another name for these is that they're all sometimes called rare earth metals. And we weren't really exposed to these until this last 20 years.
Yeah.
Because they're in the ground and nobody had a use for them. But now they're part of all of our smart technologies, our cell phones, our Tesla cars, computers.
Yeah.
You know, they're all using these rare earths. So we're exposed to rare earths now. And the issue is these are very big atoms. And most chelators aren't big enough to grab onto them and get a really good grip. So, I mean, imagine if I give you a marble to grab onto and you can hold it in your fist, that marble's not going anywhere. If I give you a basketball to hold onto with your hand, you can hold onto it a little bit, but it can easily get knocked out. Right. So that's the issue with these chelators. You need to find something big enough to grab onto these giant atoms.
Yeah.
And the main one that people are going to be exposed to is something called gadolinium.
Yeah, that's actually a contrast agent used in medical imaging, right?
Yeah, so there's 40 million MRIs a year in the United States. A third of them, I think, use imaging, contrast agents. That's where they inject gadolinium in because it makes it easier to see on film with the radiologist. It makes it easier for the imaging person to see the contrast of what they're looking at. So 40 million MRIs a year, a third of them with gadolinium, that's 16 million. And six out of the seven gadolinium contrast agents use bad chelators. They use what are called linear chelators, right? So you've got this giant basketball of a gadolinium ion, and they've got like a little bit of twine that they wrap around it to grab on, right? There's six of the seven of them are like that. And then one of them is macrocyclic. The seventh one will actually, it's called DOTA. And that I pray you don't need an MRI. And if you do, that you don't need a contrast agent. And if you absolutely have to do it, get the DOTA gadolinium, because that one is a macrocyclic, meaning it wraps around it. And DOTA is actually a cousin to EDTA. It's like the stretched out version of it. It's just widened a little bit to be able to grab on properly. Okay, so what happens in people who get the contrast agent is, one, most of them are getting the gadolinium with a chelator that will let loose the gadolinium. So now there's free gadolinium in the tissue. Two, if there's any extra phosphorus in the bloodstream, because they happen to be high in phosphorus, or maybe they just had a pop soda, a soda drink, a soft drink at the hospital, or in their tissue, they drink a lot of soda and it's in their tissue, and that high phosphorus will displace the gadolinium. And also, if their kidneys aren't really doing well, then it'll take longer to get rid of the stuff, and that's longer for the gadolinium to knock off the chelator. And so now you've got gadolinium in the body. And if you ever want to have your heart broken, go look up gadolinium deposition disorder on YouTube and listen to the stories of the people that have gadolinium poisoning. And, you can see the kind of hell they're in. Right. And of course, not everyone who gets gadolinium toxicity is going to get it to the same degree. So for some people, their lives are utterly destroyed and ruined by it. Some people don't get enough gadolinium in them to stay around, that it bothers them. And then a number of people will have it where it knocks them down, but they never connect the dots. And they never realize that, ever since that contrast IV, I have had symptom XYZ and ABC have gotten worse and all these, I never thought about it that way. But yeah, that was the beginning of when it all started going downhill. So if, gadolinium detox, so how do you get rid of gadolinium? So there's a chelator called DOTA. And like I said, it's a version of EDTA. And so we have made available for people with who want to support the body in clearing gadolinium. We have a product called Captomet that Could should be available. CAPTIMET for like captive or capture metal.
Captomet.
Yeah, trying to grab the metal, capture the metal. Okay. And you know, I've only other. So this is, of course, not just for gadolinium. That particular chelator bonds to lots of heavy types of metals, but it's the same issue with mercury. If you try to chelate out gadolinium with something that's not going to grab onto it very well, and there's only one thing I know that does, then you run the risk of having the gadolinium move around too.
Yeah. And yeah, it's sort of like picking it up and carrying it half a block and dropping it again, right? Not good enough.
Right. And especially since the body may have, in its wisdom, stored that someplace as in the least harmful way it could. Like, gained 5 pounds of body weight after that MRI. That's weird. Yeah, because the body was creating fat to store the gadolinium away from your internal organs. And then if you put it out of that fat and get it into your brain, well, now it's a bigger problem.
I still have in my vivid memory when I tried to use homeopathics to deal with my mercury toxicity, and it was successful in pushing it around.
Yeah,
I was walking around. It felt as though I was walking under a glass dome. My sensory perception was shifting and distorted in a bizarre way. And I remember one curious effect was that I could not tell whether I was urinating or not.
Because, it was damaging your nerves and your sensory apparatus.
Yeah, the sensory apparatus was affected, which that was, you know, at that point I was in a corporate boardroom suit and tie kind of thing. Imagine the fun incidents when I would go to the washroom, do my business, shake, zip up. Oh, no, it's still running.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm just saying that as it was being displaced and running around my physiology, it was truly creating weird, weird stuff. So I'm intimately familiar with this level of neurological effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you've ever had a contrast agent in your life, I think doing a detox from that's a wise thing to do. Now, we spoke a little while ago about what happens when these metals crystallize, right? So,
they cluster up. They
create,
They create structures that are larger than individual.
Right. So once you cross a certain threshold in crystal size, crystals become pretty much insoluble. And so what you have to do is break them down to a smaller size so that you can then render them soluble, that you can then urinate them out. And so, you know, we make our electron charger with the pulse feature. And the idea is that it's a piezoelectric phenomena. And the piezoelectric principle states that if you squeeze a crystal, you get electricity. But it also works backwards. If you pump electricity into a crystal, you get vibration. And so if you've got the right frequency of if you've got the electricity hitting the crystal in the right way, it vibrates it can shatter it. And then now you cross below that threshold where now it can become soluble again.
Yep.
Right. So I've been using the electron charger for 3 years. I'm only now at the point where if I use it or don't use it, no big deal. But you know, I couldn't get enough of it for the first few months, and it was at least 2 years before I could go a day without it and not feel it.
I've used the electron charger for about 6 months every day for several hours, like 2-3 hours, and then came the day when my body said, "Well, you've done it.
Yeah, that's when your battery, your internal battery monitor hits 100, and you're like, "Okay, I'm full now." So then I thought to myself, all right, well, I don't want to go in this cycle where I charge myself up and then I spend the other 23 hours of the day, you know, discharging.
Yeah.
Because So Martin, when was the last time you were barefoot on the ground?
I'm afraid it's been a couple of years.
Right.
Yeah. I walk on the beach whenever I can, but I'm actually not too resilient. The bottoms of my feet are actually unused to gravel. I can handle sand, and I'm really bad at crushed rock.
Yeah.
So anyway, the answer is not very many of us practice barefoot walking.
Right. But, you know, that is how all animals are designed.
Yeah. We are that way too. We used to be wearing leather shoe on bare skin, right?
And the leather would transmit the electrons. So I thought to myself, well, I don't want to go through this thing where I've got my electric charge, I feel really good, and then I got 12 to 24 hours before I do it again, you know, walking around in synthetic clothes with insulated shoes and all electronics. I want to be barefoot all the time, but that's not really realistic. I can't do that.
Right.
The whole point of being barefoot is being in contact with the planet, because the planet is this giant source of electrons. Well, could you put a planet in your pocket? And I know it sounds a little crazy, but
engineer will think of a way.
Okay. Right. So what I did is, this is the portable electron charger, and it's got a little dial on it. So it goes from, you know, 0 to 300 volts, which is goes a little bit higher than, you know, normally it's about 100 odd volts per meter on the Earth, difference between the ground up. So if you're 6 feet tall, the differential between your feet and your head is around 200 volts, and that creates a current. And this microcurrent, everybody's spending thousands of dollars on microcurrent machines. Barefoot, you are automatically a microcurrent machine. So I made it go up to 300 or anywhere in that range. So if you wanted a little extra kick, you could get it. And if you'll notice, there's a metal clip on the back. And what that does is, the electrons actually come out of the clip. And so you put it in your on your belt with the metal clip against your skin, and it's feeding you electrons as if you're barefoot. And if you're a lady and wearing a dress or a skirt and you can't do that, there's a little port, and you can run a cable through it that will go to either a wrist or an ankle bracelet and ground you that way. So now I'm grounded when I'm driving my car. I'm grounded when I'm walking in the office. I could even have it while I'm sleeping if I want. So now I can be barefoot all the time and still wear shoes.
Right on. And so do you dial it up to the halfway up all the time, or how do you practically use it?
Just how it feels for you. I put that there for people that might be very sensitive and want to play around with it. I mean, I could have just simply said, hey, it's going to be a 200 across the board, but you know, it didn't take any that much more work to put a potentiometer in there and give people a little bit of control over it.
Okay. Clip against the belly. Very good.
Well, I think that's about all I have for you today, Martin.
That's awesome. Thank you. All right. Spencer Feldman, thank you very much. This is a life enthusiast, Martin Patella here. You find us at life-enthusiast.com. The phone number is 866-543-3388. And thank you, Spencer.
Sure thing. Take care, Martin.